I would like to inform all parties the call is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. Thank you.
All right. Hello, everyone. What happens is this is Mike Blades, the co-chair of the High Security Working HSTLD Advisory Group. We have a very light attendance today on today's call. Evan, Mikey, myself, Jonathan Frakes, and from ICANN staff, Craig Schwartz. What we're going to do is, notwithstanding the light turnout, we are going to, for purposes of moving forward, begin to discuss Principle 4, which was originally proposed by Evan. This will not be the, if you will, final say, obviously, but we're going to use the most constructive use of our time to at least begin to flesh Principle Number 4 out, and those members that were not able to attend could go back and hopefully make use of this audio recording to provide some additional feedback. So, with that, Evan, if you want to take lead on this particular thing and move us forward, and it's a small, intimate group, so if anyone wants, please just step up and interject. All right,
okay.
Evan, you got the floor.
Okay. I am at point 4.1, which, according to my spreadsheet, has me on line 324. Is anyone following along with that?
Yeah, Evan, I was going to say that the spreadsheet's displayed in the Adobe chat room, so that's, I have it figured right now at, or I should say teed up at principle number 4.
Okay, principle number 4, and then it starts right underneath with 4.1?
Correct.
Okay, sorry, I'm not on Adobe Connect yet. I'm just looking at the spreadsheet that I received on it yesterday from you guys. Okay, so, all right, the main reason I brought this up in the first place is going under the supposition that the HSTLD basically has to be, you can't just have a registry that commits to security without the lower parts of the food chain going any which direction. So the intention was to show that there was a responsibility up and down that food chain for everyone to be part of the high security process. And so my concern, coming from the sort of at-large end-user point of view, is to have a way that the registrants that are also part of this understand that they're part of a high-security zone and sort of do their part to make sure, to understand that this is a different thing. They're not just coming in because it's a marketing thing. They're coming in because they're coming into a high security environment, and that means they should not only expect it from their suppliers of internet services, but they should also be prepared to be part of that process as well. So that's essentially the spirit and the intent under which I was proposing Principle 4. And so under 4.1, I'll start with 4.11. So the control is procedures exist to notify registrants of the important of maintaining accurate domain information. I personally would like to have hoped that this is sort of ICANN-wide, but this is something that we could have put explicit processes in place. What does everyone think about this? Because, I mean, to me, this is something that should be ICANN-wide, but maybe there ought to be a special control in place for here to ensure that the registry is conveying that information on behalf of the TLD to everyone that purchases a domain.
I guess my comments. Okay, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead, Mike.
Okay, Mikey. So I think this perhaps ties into some of the discussions that are going to be taking place with the law enforcement in Brussels regarding certain elements of the newly or the proposed RAA. So I think that this potentially is a timely topic to discuss. the only thing that, again, is rather limiting in today's discussion is we have no registrars who are rather vocal on this issue on the call. So I think I'll just leave that placeholder there for them to interject. But I'm sure if John McElwain on behalf of the IPC was here, he would be, I think, very supportive of this. So, again, just trying to put some placeholders in there to make sure that I think the viewpoints of advisory group members are properly noted. Mikey, you're up.
I'm just confused. I mean, there is a requirement today that registrars contact registrants annually and bug them about maintaining accurate WHOIS information. How does this differ from that?
Well, similar to a number of other controls that exist through the document, there are certain instances where you have you have controls that are supposedly in place for every single TLD, but that aren't heavily enforced. And the idea of being part of a high security zone is that there's a control that would be enforced and checked and audited, perhaps to an extent that ICANN's own enforcement resources don't allow for. And so the intention was to take some of these things that, you know, maybe by ICANN policy everyone should be adhering to, but I mean, it's just been the experience within at large, and I can tell you many people have been doing research on this from our end, where in some cases the breach of some of these policies is just outrageous. And so one of the basic things we'd hope for in an HS zone would be a more strict enforcement and auditing of some of these things that you'd think would be obvious and you'd think would be part of the conventional RIA, but simply are being broken left, right, and center through the conventional part of the namespace.
I guess if we're gonna start bringing up that kind of issue, then we might want to make it clear that this is not really new policy. This is really a request for a higher degree of enforcement and auditing. I think that one of the things that makes this document hard to read is because there are so many things that are, you know, sometimes actually already policy, and it would be useful for folks to know that, unless you're anticipating some more policy, some change to the policy, and if so, I think we ought to let them know.
No, I have no problem with that. As a matter of fact, I'm sure that we could go through the RIA and perhaps pick out specific clauses that this is meant to address, enforce, and audit. I don't have a problem with that, and I certainly understand that there are certain parts of what we're going to be talking about here that one would think would be common practice amongst all registries and registrars, but just isn't. And so the HS zone is, if you know, going back to the goals of trying to build public confidence and saying, okay, the policies exist in ICANN but are very widely ignored or broken. At least in the high security zone, a consumer can come in with the confidence that there's extra measures being put in place to make sure they're not being broken.
Yeah, and I think that when we say widely ignored or broken, we better have some facts behind that.
Otherwise,
we're going to get cranky.
I can put you in touch with the people that have documented proof, but that's beyond this call.
Yeah, I don't want to be in touch with them. I think they need to, their documentation needs to be in the report.
They exist.
Jonathan, it looks like you have your hand raised.
Oh, I did. I don't know if you give me the mic, if that actually goes to the mic on my speaker, but Evan, this is, I think this is really good stuff, right? And one of the reasons that this has been sort of a constantly, like the reason it has to still be brought up after 10 years is that there's a real sort of a cat fight between registries and registrars about who kind of owns a customer and having discussions and contact with the customer directly as the registry. And then the registrars, I think the compromise that exists now, which is that annual review, is something that kind of came up as a compromise to make sure that the WHOIS information is accurate. In this, are you proposing, though, that It would be the registry as opposed to the registrar who would be in touch with the registrant?
What I'm proposing is that whoever is doing the third-party audit or the audit of this, that essentially the audit would also include that policies are in place and that that adequate protection is made to that essentially to audit that the registries and registrars are doing what's expected of them by the agreement.
Gotcha. So this isn't necessarily having anything to do with the registries directly reviewing the WHOIS information and determining that it's accurate necessarily.
The reason
I bring it up, I'm not opposed to it. I don't have a horse in the race as far as like you know where I stand on this, but I have historically seen the registries and registrars kind of push back on this because what happens is it really drives up the cost of the domain in the process of making that happen.
Believe me, I'm not using this as an example of anything except for one that I know clearly, which is CIRA, the .ca domain. They regularly send out an email, and they expect people to respond to that email. If they don't respond to that email, then the accuracy of that email address as a contact address becomes suspect. That's something they do through an automated process.
Yeah, it is kind of automated, and it's sort of hit or miss as far as the efficiency and even, I think, the quality of those results, right?
Well, it's a lot more than some others are doing.
It's bigger than zero, yes. Any improvement over zero is good.
So,
and then sorry to interrupt you, I have a second kind of question. Is, like, proxy services or who is proxy, how does that fit into this? I think that'll come up.
I'm personally trying to avoid the bigger who is fight in what we're doing
cool.
here. Okay?
Great.
I'm not trying to use this committee as a front in the who is wars. This is mainly an attempt to say that when there is a name on the internet that is part of a high security zone that you can reach them and that they're not giving you Shea Stadium as an address.
Gotcha.
Okay, whether that's through a third party, if the third party can be verifiable and the third party is proven to have the genuine contact information of the original domain, I'm not here to fight that. Is having something accurate better than having something inaccurate?
Well, and I'll tell you what's behind my questions is more like I think this is good personally, and I'd hate to see it get kind of caught in the tar of the who is debate. Right. So I like where you're going with this.
I'm deliberately trying to avoid that kind of fight.
Nicely done.
Mikey again. I'm not sure it avoids the debate. I don't see how this avoids the debate.
Well, I agree with both of you, right? Like, you know, at least here it's not saying the registry must do this, and this is what the registry must do, right, which gets kind of entangled into the who is stuff. This just basically says this is what we'd like to see.
The registry,
am I misstating, right?
Well, I'm sort of thinking, like, for instance, in 4.1.1, the registry and the registrar have an obligation to tell the registrants they must be accurate, okay? Is somebody actually going to push back against that?
Well, that's the one I think is currently in policy.
It's in policy, but it's not being verified. The whole point behind this, and this goes back to the very first question on this, is that a lot of these are not necessarily new policy. Some of these are simply putting in more controls and enforcement of existing policies. This isn't necessarily making policy. This is providing greater auditing for what supposedly exists for all TLDs.
Well,
so is your concern that it's redundant, Mikey?
Well, my concern is that it's confrontational and redundant. It seems to me that what this is almost waving a flag in front of the bull. And we better be ready for a visceral reaction from the participants in the who is discussion, and we better have really good reasons why we're waving this flag in front of the bull, because this is an old debate.
It's an old debate, but we're talking about an optional designation. Remember, this is an opt-in thing, and we've beaten that horse to death enough times. So this is an optional thing that nobody has to go into. But the idea is, if you're going to go into this zone, if you're going to say to the world that you are higher security, is it not reasonable to ask that there is at least some protection to the public, that a little bit of extra effort is made to make sure is being put in place to put in to instill public confidence that the registrants are who they say they are?
I think the concern that I've got then is that this isn't, you know, then this needs to be reworded to say we want stronger enforcement of existing policy in this area to make it clear.
Well,
this isn't a policy change. This is an enforcement change.
Well, and the intention is that the auditing, whoever, whatever third party or whatever is involved in the verification and auditing that a zone meets the high security requirements would be going over and above conventional ICANN compliance resources to ensure this.
Well, you know, I think then we just need to state that.
Okay.
That's my main point, which is that this is not a policy change. This is an enforcement change.
Okay.
So this is Pelage. I'm back after hanging up on myself. And I heard your comments there about whether this is an enforcement or a policy change. What I was trying to communicate before I hung up on myself was, instead of trying to deep dive too much into these sub-principles, perhaps we provide Evan the ability to go through them at a high level, because as I noted at the top of this call, without some of the more larger registry and registrar, as well as intellectual property participants participating, really not going to be able to sign off on anything definitively. So let's use our time to perhaps do some broad brushstrokes instead of microscopic analysis.
Well, I agree with you, Mike, but also if there's any way that we can couch this in a term that makes it so that, you know, we're trying to offer some extra comfort to the public while trying as much as possible to try and avoid the conventional who is battles. I mean, is it, you know, if this is really being painted as registrants and end users as consumers and versus suppliers, this is really not good. And I'm hoping that we can do something through this optional designation that says, okay, the people that are part of this are prepared to go a little extra further in providing public confidence. I mean, is that not at the heart of this whole designation?
I do not disagree with you. However, the ability for things to get hijacked in the ICANN ecosystem is something that happens, and I've seen happen through 10 years of my participation. So I think that's just a reality we need to accept and, I think, guard against as much as possible.
Okay. All right.
But I don't mind this is Jonathan. Can I just comment really quickly?
Sure.
Evan, I think you could accomplish with what you're doing here. I really took to heart what Mikey was saying. And, you know, if there was just something in here that said, you know, enforcement of existing WHOIS data accuracy requirements would happen proactively at least annually, with communication, and secondarily, you know, whatever third party or whatever auditing of accuracy might happen by a third party to ensure that that's enforced. That may be less contentious and still get you the same net result.
That works for me. I'm not here to pick a fight.
Well, and we're not necessarily fighting. I think what we're doing is trying to kind of put some armor on this so that it's present but doesn't attract the wrong attention.
No, appreciate it. I mean, if a little wordsmithing makes it a little bit more palatable, then hey, all the more, you know, more power to it.
Now, normally we'd have Andy do that. Would do you want to propose sort of a revised text for that, or how do we?
I can't think of something off the top of my head because I'm not the one that's being really good at anticipating the crap that's going to get thrown at it.
Right.
I may not be in the best position to understand the defense, so I'm happy to work with folks, but I'm not sure I'm the best person to start off writing it because I'm not exactly sure what I should be writing. I see where you're getting from. I'm not totally sure that I've got enough of a history of the ejections to understand how to deflect it.
Gotcha. Well, in the interest of time, I don't mind taking a stab at that and sending it off to you. Make sure it matches what you think, and then we can add it to the list.
Works for me.
Okay. There we go. Now, Mike, we can move on.
All right. Next, Evan, we're now, I guess, going to 4.1.2.
Right. And again, these are procedures. This is essentially making sure that policies exist, both at the registry and the registry passing these down to the registrars. So at 4.1.2 is the registry operator should require the registrars to communicate to the registrant. So it's essentially making sure that the message doesn't stop at the registrars, but in fact is being delivered further on. And going into the notes is exactly as you guys are saying, Mike and Jonathan, that the notes are already saying some of this is already a duplication of what's there, of what may exist in 3.1. So it's just making very explicit, from a public confidence point of view, something that, you know, it may be a bit redundant, but being explicit like it is in here, I think will help. And the verification of this is, you know, is that policy in place? And, if a third party goes to a sampling of registrants, you know, and surveys them, well, were you told this information?
This is Mikey. I think this is the same kind of thing. I think we need to, because it's my understanding that there is already a requirement on registrants to have accurate address information on file. And so I think we need to make it clear that this is, again, an enhancement of the auditing function, not a change in policy.
Right. You're right. And, in fact, I don't even know if this is in the RAA. The RAA may state that the data has to be accurate. Here we're actually saying we're making sure as part of the HS process that the registrars are actually giving notice to the registrants that this is the case.
Right, but those notices are part of the policy, I mean.
Okay. This is just, then this is simply verification what should exist already and is simply providing an extra level of compliance.
So right. What happens is, just this is Blades, if I could interject for a second. People may recall at the beginning of this process, one of the things I was asking for was a comparison of what elements are already contained in the existing registry agreements and in the existing registry agreements as well as the newly proposed registry agreements. And I think that's an exercise that we may still want to do. And from my standpoint here, I think it's probably something that, Craig could potentially do that, but I actually think that this is something that legal needs to go through and provide their analysis of, does this show up? What are the obligations, and are they showing up in the new agreement? So this is something we may want to task to ICANN's growing legal department there to find some attorney to go through and do this matchup. Is this a I mean, Evan, Mikey, is this something I think that would potentially address some of your concerns here to identify what are existing obligations and where there might be new changes or enforcement actions?
That works for me. I mean, I hadn't intended that this process would be actually creating new policy in the get-go. So having that explicitly identified can't hurt.
Mikey?
Yeah, this is Mikey. I think it's going to be especially helpful for applicants for HSTLD status to know sort of the boundaries of things. So for sure, I think we need to be able to tell them, you know, look, the only difference between this particular control and what's in your existing contract is that the expectation is that they'll get audited more frequently by a third party. And then be able to say in other cases, no, this is above and beyond existing policy, and here are the limits, so that people understand the boundaries of what they're getting into if they sign up.
That's perfect.
All right. Excellent, excellent. So, Craig, if you want, just give Mr. Jeffries and the legal people a heads up that we're going to be throwing some work at them across the transom, okay?
Yep.
Okay, and so we could basically put 413 under that same umbrella. Okay. Now, see, 414 gets beyond that and starts to go into the whole issue of proxies, and that isn't really the same question as we've been asking for the previous three.
Yeah, and I'll tell you what, right now, without the benefit of the IPC and GoDaddy, I think that's just a kettle of fish we probably do not want to. I mean, I'll let you explain it here, but, I mean, I think that's just a big kettle of fish that we don't want to open up on this call, at least in the remaining 20 minutes.
Understood. My personal point of view, and I don't know how much this jives with anything else, is that I don't have a problem with the proxy as long as the proxy can be verified to point to something real. You know, as long as there's some there's some kind of traceable path, as long as the path to the proxy doesn't eventually end in a dead end itself. And I don't know.
This is Mikey. That's quite different than what's on the page here.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. And personally, I have no problem striking 414 or replacing it with something quite different, because I have a feeling 414 itself would be more contentious than even the other three.
Oh yeah, way more. I mean, that's waving a red flag for sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
Evan,
so,
can I ask a clarifying question? Because as I read 411 and 413, they're only subtly different. I didn't notice. They almost seem similar. Very similar.
And in fact, they probably can be combined. I don't recall myself breaking them out quite like that.
Okay. I'd almost say that they'd be merged.
Arguably, you could combine 411, 412, and 413 into a single control. I mean, it's basically procedures exist to notify registrants of a couple of different things. So could that be lumped into one control? To me, probably. I mean, if you look almost all the rows in those three almost all the columns in those three rows are identical. Now one of the things that possibly will be contentious is that in the notes to 411 there is mention of a code of conduct to be signed by registrants. This is something that I thought could be part of an HSTLD. I think it should, but I know there's going to be a lot of pushback. But from a point of view of public confidence, if the public knows that every registrant inside a certain TLD has signed a code of conduct, that's an issue of building confidence. But that one is probably going to get a lot of pushback. Personally, I'm prepared for it, but that one is definitely the waving the flag.
So you're suggesting that it would be suggested wording for the registration agreement?
A code of conduct to be signed and adhered to by registrants.
Right.
That would be on file with the registry.
And you're saying that could be included in or supplemental to a registration agreement?
Yes.
I mean, it seems as though it could be included in the registration agreement. So if it was just like some suggested text that be included, and I'm kind of scratching my head and I'm thinking, I think that's actually in there right now with what it's just not widely enforced.
And that may be just another case here where the HS version of this is simply a better enforced version of what already exists. I don't have a problem admitting that for most of these controls.
Well, I wonder if we could collapse 411 and 413 and then suggest that these would be more actively enforced or something to that effect.
Okay. Well, 411, 412, 413 is a matter of ensuring certain information is provided to registrants. And so the third party that's auditing the HS verification basically makes sure that these messages are passed down. 414 is something very different.
Right. And so, Jonathan, you know, you're on to another level of the thing. Here,
probably,
in these
probably.
First three, this is just notification that they ought to do this stuff, but no auditing that they've actually done it.
Right.
That presumably happens elsewhere.
Yeah. 411 to 413, the only auditing is the registrar providing this information to the registrant. That's all that's being audited as part of 411 to 413.
I'm gonna copy and paste what I typed. I sent to your. I have a Gmail address for you, Evan.
Yep.
But I'm gonna just put this in here into the chat. It didn't carry line feed or spacing correctly, so there's some words that run together. But essentially, the verbiage for the recording is candidate registry and/or registry service provider affirms that registrants will be notified of existing rules and policy with respect to accurate and current registrant information at the time of the registration, transfer, and renewal of a domain name.
Okay.
More there, but
I'm okay with that wording, but somewhere in there we've also got to have the point that registrars are part of this chain, because it's the registrars that are the point of contact with the registrants, rarely the registry directly. So if an HS TLD is being sold and distributed through a registrar, they're going to be the point of contact that actually has to make sure this is delivered. Or does the registry do it direct? I don't know. To me, it's less important to me than the fact it gets done. Whether it's done through an indirect chain or directly is less important to me than it gets done. Do the registrars have a part to play in this at all, or is this basically the registry talking directly to its registrants?
There, so we'll add the next line. Registrars will agree to make these notices to or allow registry to provide said notices to registrants directly.
Perfect. Yeah. Those two lines together, that is When we put in the subtle differences between 411, 412, and 413, the wording Jopin's just provided down here, I think, helps cover some of that.
I Hey, Jonathan, for the benefit of the folks who didn't make it to today's call and who aren't in this Adobe chat, will you circulate that language to the list that you just typed into the chat room?
Yes, I will.
Or at least provide it to Andy and to Evan and to anyone else that needs to say it.
I'm doing that now, or I may do it in the break between the calls.
Okay, we don't have much left of this. Now,
well, it's the objective to get it all at least brushed through it within the hour, so I guess that's a good thing.
Okay. Well, we've got two left. One is and 414 is definitely going to be contentious and probably has to go back for better wordsmithing. The HSTLD, I don't know if is the right place to get into a battle over proxies yes or proxies no. Personally, I would be very comfortable with a rewording of this, of saying if proxies are used, they must point to something real. And I don't know the right word. I can't off the top of my head think of the best wording for that, but I hope you guys have an idea what I mean.
This is Mikey. This is another case where I think that's already the situation in existing policy. We should have the legal folks confirm that. But, I think that's part of the ongoing proxy battle. And, in fact, I think what happens now, Michael, you're smarter about this than me by a mile, is that the proxy becomes liable if they can't locate the actual registrant. Isn't that true?
The RRA has language about the registrant being the legal entity in which the name is registered. Again, I would want to go back. That's what it was. I want to read the new RAA, but there definitely is that thinking. And Craig, perhaps you could update. I can't just release it. Wasn't that a draft communique regarding the legal obligations associated with the proxy registrant?
Yeah, let me see if I can put my hands on that really quickly.
I mean, I'll tell you, 414 would be nice if it could get through, but it probably, from based on what you folks are saying right now, it probably doesn't have a hope in hell.
I think this is a non-starter.
Because I would think that if somebody is going to go after, say, a dot bank, or if somebody's trying to do financial transactions, does somebody really want to do a financial transaction with an organization hiding behind a proxy? I mean, think of yourself.
A different example would be the dot shelter for battered women.
Understood, but would that be
the situation on privacy is a little bit different than the dot bank?
And for that very reason, I can't see dot shelter as being a candidate for a high security zone, because privacy is more important than access to them.
Well, but they're going to be interested, I would think, they would be interested in high security, that phrase. Oh, high security, that's good. We want our...
What does that mean? High security for the supplier of information is not necessarily the same thing as what matters as high security to the consumer of information. So who is being served by this?
Right, but
okay.
You're walking into a debate that has a lot of history, and I think if you're not prepared with pretty good rationale, it's just a lightning rod. It will draw down an amazing response from the community.
Yeah,
I'm not sure that it accomplishes the objective of high security TLDs.
Well, then that brings me back to the objective of a high security TLD. If the objective is to provide a TLD that provides more confidence to the public, then we should be going on that. If the goal is to provide something that looks high security to the registrar and registry and registrant, then that's a slightly different issue. So who is being served by this ultimately? If you have some points
that I've been raising for months is that we don't have that nailed down.
Well, put it this way, okay? If the we're going, and this is going to the entire core of why this program exists, why there should be an HS zone over and above the standard core services, to be able to say to somebody, hey, look, we're more secure than the other guy. And that means that that means something. And I'm trying to put on the consumer/end user hat and say that means if you want me to have more confidence in something like .bank or .shop or .whatever, that the person to whom I am linking up is not phishing, is genuinely the people who I think I'm talking to, and if they want to take my money, they shouldn't be hiding behind a proxy.
Well, you know, I don't want to open that whole debate now because this is the fundamental debate. It's not the objective of these technical calls.
You're right. But they're inevitable. I mean, in terms of, okay, if it's a technical call and we assume that 414 wants to have some protections against proxies, we can argue technically how to do that. But I'm already being told that doing that technical issue is a moot point because that particular line item will never make it past the next stage.
Well, I think that particular line item needs a lot of justification beyond a mere prohibition. And so far, that justification hasn't been provided, nor has the connection been made between that line item and higher security. And I think we need all that. I think we need all of that justification in order to be able to defend it in front of an otherwise very skeptical community.
And I guess that depends on who is considered to be the community. If the community is simply the suppliers of information, then you're right. If the community are the people that use the Internet, then you have a very different paradigm here.
Not disagreeing, but I think we've got to get to the root of that before, you know, this is a circular argument. And my favorite flavor is get the fundamental principles sorted out before details, but I was overruled on that.
What's everybody else on this call take on this?
It's complex. And I don't mean, it's a complex issue. And, you know, Mikey, there are some things that we've allowed to proceed in parallel without trying to foreclose some issues. But I do think we are getting to a specific point in our work product with the second snapshot as well as the potential issuing of an RFI where I think, based upon those data sets, we'll begin to restrict some of these parallel discussions and hone it down. So
in keeping with the technical nature of the call, which has even fewer, less time in it than when we started, to go to 4.2. 4.2 is essentially the one part of this entire food chain that is the responsibility of the registrants rather than registries or registrars. That essentially 4.2 means that there is a way to audit that for every registrant that exists under a TLD, there is some kind of an acknowledgement, written formal acknowledgement or online electronic signature, that's a detail, but some kind of explicit acknowledgement by an authorized representative of the registrant that they understand what these regulations are and they agree to adhere to them. That's what 4.2 is about.
Could that not be contained inside, could this just be in the form of some suggested verbiage that was contained within the registration agreement?
Okay, so it's an so 4.1 obligates the registrant and or registry to provide that. 4.2 essentially commits the registrant to acknowledge it formally.
Well, I thought that 4.1, perhaps I'm mistaking this, but 4.1 seemed to be about the notice to the registrant.
Yes, okay. Right. 4.1 is saying this is what you got to do. 4.2 is the registrant acknowledging it.
And you're saying
that they got the notice?
That should be carved out and explicit? Because, I mean, we kind of have this now. It's just, well, unfortunately, it's being recorded, but I'll just go ahead and say it. It's kind of not as tightly enforced as it could be, you know, mostly just due to resourcing. But you're saying that there should be some separate piece of paper or, some separate affirmation. I don't see why that couldn't be contained in the registration agreement, and it's actually happening now.
As long as it's not just a click through that people can say, oh, I didn't realize it was in there. Hold on a second.
So, Michael, what do you want to do about the time, because it's now a little bit after 5 East Coast, and you've got another group scheduled to dial into another bridge.
Okay, cool.
Sorry about that. Okay. That's my concern. Is that you can have a registrant that says, well, you know, that if it's just a click through and they aren't explicitly acknowledging, you know, it's sort of like, well, you get a contract, but there's certain clauses you have to explicitly initial in them.
I think we need to, I don't know where Michael's at. It's almost like he fell off the call, but I think we need to drop this call and redial in and do the next one. Because it's 2 minutes after the hour.
Yeah, I think, Mike, that sounds right.
This is John McElwain. They just put me into this call.
Okay. Well, maybe we can just hang on this call. That'd be good.
Yeah,
that's convenient.
It is the same, it's the same passcode that you give to the conference, so they're going to be putting them in here anyway.
Well, they used to make us drop the call.
They're going to make us drop the call because I just got a call from Verizon asking if the second call was going to start. So I recommend we all disconnect from this line and dial back in to, even though it's the same number and the same passcode, it's going to create less confusion if we do it that way.
Let's do it.
Yeah.
All right.
All right. We'll see you in a minute.